Welcome to the Holy Shit Podcast. Frank and Patsy get together to discuss the issues of the moment. You know, the things that make you say, holy shit. Here are your hosts, Master Hapkidoist, Patsy Zarilla, and Attorney Frank Natel, Esquire.
Boris, darling, you've done it again.
Of course. Never underestimate the power of a schnook.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Holy Shit Podcast for August 28th, 2019, episode number 27. I am your co-host, Patsy Zarilla.
And I'm your co-host, Frank Natel.
And Frank, how are you doing today?
I'm wonderful. Thank you, Master Patsy, for asking, and yourself.
I could not be any better, to be honest with you. Some interesting developments over the last 24 hours. You know, it's strange. Normally, we're scrambling to keep up with things that are going on. This grew a little bit of legs last night, and with the exception of a little blurb that happened later today, for this administration and for everything we've been covering, it's been a rather slow day, which would be normal for everybody else. I don't know how much you watch or pay attention to MSNBC. I do know you watch it. But for me, with the exception of, you know, Joy Reid and
Rachel Maddow.
And what's her name that's on at 4 o'clock? Nicole Wallace. With the exception of those, with the exception of those three, I really don't have a whole lot of use for MSNBC. I can't stand Morning Joe. I like Reverend Allen, and I like Chris. What's his name? That's on before Maddow. Chris Hayes.
Yeah.
But I just like them. I'm not like super crazy over them, but like I would follow Maddow to the ends of the earth, and I think Joy Reid is absolutely brilliant. And like those three are what does it for me. But between Maddow's show and Lawrence O'Donnell's, and I'll be honest, Frank, I'm not a big fan of Lawrence O'Donnell. They kind of have a little bumper of, you know, a couple of minutes where they're like conversing back and forth between shows. You see it on CNN a lot. Between Cuomo and Don Lennon.
Yep.
But Lawrence O'Donnell last night, as they were bumping into his show, he's kind of having a little bit of a back and forth with Maddow, and he dropped a bomb during that little segment and I'm just going to read this to you here real quick. I'm reading this from the Washington Examiner, but you can find it anywhere. A single source close to Deutsche Bank has told me that Donald Trump's loan documents that shows that they have co-signers and how he was able to obtain those loans, and that the co-signers were Russian oligarchs. Maddow shockingly replied, "What? Really? That would explain, it seems to me, every kind word Donald Trump has ever said about Russia and Vladimir Putin, if true." And I stress the "if true" part of this, O'Donnell finished. He said, you know, that Trump's tax returns reveal that he pays little to no income tax, which we pretty already know, right? I mean, that he didn't really hide that. He kind of bragged about that a little bit whenever he was campaigning. One thing he said, if true, and he kept stressing if true, that would be a significant factor in Vladimir Putin's publicly stated preference for presidential candidate Donald Trump over presidential candidate Hillary Clinton. His show then went on to kind of delve into this a little bit, but that's basically the gist of it. That really was the bombshell, right? Boy, this thing opened up a whole lot of questions for me. Let's start with the obvious. Let's assume this is true, okay? And we're saying this just for the sake of argument, just for our show. And like I said, in O'Donnell's credit, he must have said three or four times that was only a single source They couldn't collaborate it. And he kept saying over and over again, if true, if true, if true. So, you know, he kind of got himself off the hook a little bit. But if this is true, how do you think this is going to play out? Not necessarily with his base, but just the country in general, even those people who probably are on the fence.
Well, you know, when people get the full understanding, if there's verification of this, and people understand the full verification of it, people understand the full implications of it, it's going to, it will undoubtedly lead to the end of his presidency, if this is true. Because here's the thing, it has to mean that he had a co-signer. And why is that important? Because you have to find out who the co-signer is that's now financially responsible or backup financially responsible for Trump's loan of, what was it, $1 billion? I mean, it's an amazing, an astonishing amount of money that it was loaned by Deutsche Bank. And here's the thing that's really curious is, if you, as you said, if Donald Trump says, I pay no taxes, and I say that's smart. If you show zero tax return, zero, you know, that you haven't earned enough money to pay taxes, you don't have enough money to pay taxes. How mm-hmm. does a bank loan you that much money? Who underwrites that kind of a loan? Unless you've got some collateral, unless you've got some kind of cosigner. So in that case, if there's a cosigner and that cosigner is a Russian oligarch who has direct ties to the Russian government, then you've got a serious foreign influence problem that was not disclosed. And I don't see any way back from that. I see that as the end of the presidency, if that's true. That's what it means. It explains, I mean, if this is the case, it would explain a lot of his actions, meaning Trump's actions, and why he lobbies so hard at things like the G7 that just ended, to have Putin back at the table, to have Russia involved. Why Anthony Kennedy resigned from the Supreme Court? Whose son is a key figure in Deutsche Bank? How did Brett Kavanaugh's country club dues get paid, $92,000? How did his mortgage get paid off that he was underwater on, and some gambling debts that he had in the hundreds of thousands get paid off? So, you know, all before he was able to be appointed to the Supreme Court. So these kind of things start to, have a way of unraveling when this kind of information comes out. So I'm curious. I'm a little concerned, I will say. I'm a little concerned that this is an unnamed source who has, quote unquote, not seen the bank records. So how does this person have this information if they haven't seen the bank records?
Yeah, that's the one thing that really kind of made me pause, right? And made me question a few things. I'm not saying that what Lawrence O'Donnell got, he didn't actually get, that somebody didn't give it to him, right? That they didn't give him this information. I'm not saying that didn't happen. So I'm not saying O'Donnell made it up.
Right.
According to The Hill, he said again, he said it quite a few times that the story would need, and the quote is, need a lot more verification before that can be a confirmable fact. So again, he's, not saying it as a fact. He's just saying what somebody, the information that an unnamed source gave him, which is what, which is what reporters do all the time.
Right.
My feeling on the Trump side, on the Trump's front, is if it's true, I agree it could end his presidency, But part of me doesn't think it will. All right, part of me thinks that his presidency is going to continue on for the next 16 months or whatever it is. He's going to finish out his first term. I've seen nothing or felt nothing or read nothing to change my opinion of that. Regardless of what I want, I don't see it happening. I just don't think there's enough time. And I think it's very obvious that the Democrats are in no hurry to bring forth anything that's going to speed up this process. This is going to the election. I really do believe that. If this is true, I think it's going to have an effect on the election, but I still think he's going to have his 35 to 40%. I'm completely convinced that no matter what happens, they're going to vote for him. They think this guy is the greatest thing since sliced bread, and he's not going to lose one of those votes. He's going to keep his base come hell or high water. I have a bigger question, or maybe not a bigger question, but another way of looking at this. It would appear to me that for somebody like Lawrence O'Donnell to bring this out on his show, even with just the one source, right? That's taking a risk. Because even today, what was her name? Stephanie Grisham, the new White House press secretary, in case everybody didn't notice, probably not because she hasn't had a press conference yet, told Fox News, this is one of the reasons that a majority of Americans have lost trust in the media. Instead of applying ethics and standards to their reporting, journalists and left-wing outlets have weaponized the media, using it to attack and harass people with little to no regard for the truth. The fact that somebody could say that on Fox News, on the Fox Entertainment Network, let's be honest, Frank, that's pretty ballsy. But it does lead to an interesting point. How willing is somebody to do this, especially whenever you're talking about somebody of Lawrence O'Donnell's stature, who definitely has a name for himself and definitely has a reputation? How much are you willing to keep putting forth things like this that are uncorroborated? You know, it takes a lot of faith in what's going on, or a lot of faith in the information you received and the source of the information to go on with it, knowing that it's uncorroborated.
It does. And, you know, I think there's just been this ongoing battle, and that's been the narrative that the Trump camp has put forth continuously. You know, that there's always this fake news narrative, and that they seem to self-perpetuate and continue to ride with that. And anytime there's a mistake that the media makes, they pounce on it, and then they accentuate that narrative. So when you have somebody like Lawrence O'Donnell, who knows that that's the history here, and then goes ahead and reports this, and then does the next thing, which is interviews people and examines, well, what if this is true? What does that mean? Because let's face it, that's what's more exciting to talk about. You know, it really could perpetuate and reinforce that narrative on Trump's end if this single unnamed source turns out to be untrue, you know, because then they're going to say, look how much they whipped up and fomented this storyline and tried to make it into something that would bring down a president when they didn't have any verification around it.
Yeah, it's a bit striking, I thought, anyhow. Well, here, Justin, breaking news. Frank, I always wanted to say that, breaking news, right? And not like the way CNN and MSNBC does, but literally breaking news the way it was supposed to be. Lawrence O'Donnell tweeted at 3:53 today, so approximately, you know, well, a little bit ago. Last night, I made an error in judgment by reporting an item about the president's finances that didn't go through our rigorous verification and standards process. I shouldn't have reported it, and I was wrong to discuss it on the air. I will address this issue on my show tonight. Well, there we go, right? I wonder if that has anything to do with Michael DeMora reporting that Deutsche Bank is declining comment and Lawrence O'Donnell's reporting that Russian oligarchs co-signed Trump's loans. The information came from a single source who had not seen the bank records. NBC has not seen the records and has not been able to verify the reporting. So, you know, that happened earlier, and then Lawrence O'Donnell just came out with that statement, you know, or, you know, earlier, or, you know, sometime after that, but still earlier today. Just goes back to what we were saying, right? It takes a lot. By the way, Michael DeMora is the producer for Morning Joe on MSNBC. Do you think maybe he jumped the gun, or do you think that he had a lot of faith in this story to run with it?
I think he got excited, and it's very possible. It's very possible he jumped the gun.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, I'm going to say just as much as you probably heard it in my voice as I was responding to all this, that I was a little, and you were too, you know, we were both a little hesitant about this storyline. You know, as much as that was apparent in both of us, I'm still willing to kind of wait and see.
Oh, so am I. So am I, but if it turns out to be accurate, holy shit, he had one hell of a scoop and he backed off on it. That's normally not how you do things. I'm funny, and you know, my degree is not in journalism by any means. You know. All of the information that I present to anybody is always verified. If it's not verified, then I simply don't present the information. Even if I trust in the processes in order to get that information, I still have everything verified. Nothing leaves my desk or leaves my department without somebody else in my department verifying it. And I would think that journalism is pretty much the same way. And to go on and do something like that. And that would be my dog. To do something like that, you're either desperate or excited, would be my guess. And I'm curious which one it is. I want to say that he got excited. I agree with you. But you know what? If those ratings are low, if people are starting to look elsewhere at 10 o'clock, it may have been a swing for the fences. He might have tried to hit a home run with this. On the other hand, if he was right, you know, it's a tough call. It's really tough to say. I hope that I'll be honest. I hope he was right. I really do. Not because, you know, my disdain for Trump. Because, like I said, he's finishing out his term, and I don't think he's going to get reelected with or without this. But to put yourself out like that, I hope for Lawrence O'Donnell's sake that he didn't jump the gun.
Well, I hope not as well. And I don't think, you know, who knows? I mean, to speculate on it, but I guess I will speculate on it just for the sake of just having something to discuss on this topic. I think that, you know, he probably got excited. He had good faith with the person that gave him the information. And then normally he might have wanted to, you know, without the excitement level, I guess, he might have wanted to say, okay, great, thank you for that information. I'm going to follow up on it, giving it to people in his newsroom, giving it to people who work for him and say, let's follow up on this. Let's find out what we could find out. And then we'll put it together. But, you know, there's a certain level of, hey, you know, wow, wouldn't this be amazing? Let me talk about it. And here's how I can talk about it without, you know, without totally getting in Dutch. If I say, you know, it's an unnamed source that hasn't seen the bank record. So if, and he kept saying that if, and let's just turn the tables for a second, Master Pat. So let's turn the tables. You know, there's often crazy, you know, statements put out by the White House that are unverified and unsubstantiated. Things like, China just called me last night, you know, and they want to come back to the table and negotiate. And then China says, China's, you know, foreign ministers and people that are involved in their economic policies come out and say, no, no phone call was made. So, you know, what standards are we holding everybody to? I mean, are we being, you know, across the board with everybody here? And, you know, we don't want to see, quote unquote, the good side or the right side slip into this abyss of just playing that game where they, you know, it's a tit for tat and we'll, you know, we'll play the same game you're playing, Trump. But, you know, are we holding everybody to the same standard?
Yeah, that's a really good point. It's somewhat sad that we are holding somebody on MSNBC at the 10 o'clock Eastern time slot more accountable than we're holding the President of the United States.
Exactly. Now
you can make the argument that it's journalism and that, you know, that's the journalistic standard and they're not falling out and the president doesn't have a journalistic standard that he has to appear, but he does have a standard that has been attributed to the office that he's not failing to uphold. He's literally choosing not to. It's not a matter of when you fail to do something, it's just because you don't have the ability to do it. This guy has the ability. He's a 80 whatever year old man. I mean, goddamn, if he doesn't have the ability to do it by now, what's he been doing his entire life? He just doesn't want to. He's just choosing not to. That's the difference. But I still think it's a legitimate point. Why are we holding Lawrence O'Donnell to a standard that we're not willing to hold the President of the United States to?
Exactly. And, you know, I'm going to go back to your question a few moments ago about, you know, what does this mean for the presidency? And that could be where Lawrence O'Donnell's excitement arose from. Everybody, you know, I'm not gonna say everybody, but a lot of folks who are in the business that Lawrence O'Donnell is in, they aspire to be Bob Woodward. You know, they want to be that investigative journalist who breaks the story that makes a difference in the world, you know, and is remembered forever, historically memorialized. You know, Woodward and Bernstein were those guys. And, right. You know, Lawrence O'Donnell may want to, you know, be smitten with that idea and he's reaching for that. But here's the thing. I honestly am starting to change my opinion. I was with you, firmly with you, Master Patsy, on this idea that Trump will serve his term. I'm not saying he won't, but I'm not so firmly entrenched in that idea anymore. And here's why. We've talked recently about people like Joe Walsh who have come out and written op-eds in the New York Times saying that Trump is wrong for the country. He apologized. Joe Walsh personally apologized for his role in helping to get Trump elected.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe Walsh has now thrown his hat in the ring and said he wants to be a primary challenger for Donald Trump.
Yes.
So that's an interesting development. And then you have Steve Merritt, the Mooch. You know, you've got who was involved with Trump's White House team. He was the press secretary for 11 days.
Yep.
So, you know, and now he's come out and said that Trump will turn on everybody, including the country. And he needs to assemble a team of a dozen to 18 people who are formerly with the White House that can come out and say why Trump is wrong for the country and why we need to stop him before it's too late. So we talked about those two guys not too long ago. Those are, you know, staunch Republicans who are now really coming out and putting it on the line and saying that they need to oppose this guy. When it becomes more important, we talked a little bit about, well, when are we going to hear from somebody like General Mattis? Because I talked about, you know, Rex Tillerson was quoted as saying that Trump was a fucking idiot.
Mm-hmm.
And as he left, nobody really attacked him because there was probably a fear on Trump's part. If I attack this guy, I'm going to look like an idiot because everybody respects him and I can't win that battle. And then I said, well, when is it going to be that somebody else like Mattis comes out? And here today is the day that Mattis has come out with a statement in his own op-ed. And this is from the Business Insider, published August 28th, 2019. And it says that former Secretary Jim Mattis wrote a not-so-subtle rebuke of President Donald Trump's leadership in an op-ed published in the Wall Street Journal. So his op-ed was published in the Wall Street Journal, and I'm reading from the Business Insider Journal that's reporting on that, where they kind of break it down in bullet point pieces. And they say, in the piece, Mattis condemned overly forceful leadership, particularly leaders who publicly mock and berate their critics. That's Trump to a T.
Mm-hmm.
He also defended the need to work together with allies, arguing that the U.S. is on track to occupy an increasingly lonely position, one that puts us at increasing risk in the world. Who's in charge of doing that? Trump. He is the one that's cutting off our allies. Okay. The retired Marine Corps general also called out divisive politics threatening our democracy. Mattis resigned in December, saying that his worldview was not aligned with the president's. So, I mean, just put that all together. He's saying that he resigned not because he couldn't work with Democrats, not because he couldn't work with other people, not because he couldn't work with our allies, but because his worldview was not aligned with the president's. And he's telling you here what we need to do in his worldview to not become isolated, to not become out on a precipice in a dangerous position because the president has put us there. And there's more to this. There was a lot more that's not in these bullet points because I read a lot of the op-ed. And he was saying things like when President Trump decided to pull us out of Syria, he basically was sending a signal to the troops that were with us in Syria that we're abandoning them. And it was like a stab in the back to them. And it's created a vacuum again where terrorists and the bad actors can get a foothold. And just recently, the Pentagon came out with a scathing report. This is a separate matter, Master Patsy, that says that ISIS has a resurgence and has gained a new foothold again, directly related to President Trump's actions in pulling people out of Syria. So, you know, where I'm going with all this is, I don't think we need, I mean, it would be wonderful. Let's not, you know, overlook the fact that it could be a much easier road to impeachment if we found some document that proved that Trump lied about who's backing him and that there's foreign entanglements that he hasn't disclosed. You know, those things would go a long way to making it a lot easier to bring an impeachment. But when you've got a system of well-known military leaders who are highly respected, that were with Trump's team for a long time, who have now turned and said, it's basically in our national interest to not follow what Trump's worldview is what this guy's saying, is what Mattis is saying. And his own Pentagon is now saying that he himself is responsible for a resurgence in ISIS. Trump is. And you've got, you know, thought leaders and voice people who put their voices out there every day, like Joe Walsh, saying that Trump, he apologizes for helping Trump get elected. My point is, I think that the path to impeachment is a lot easier now than what it once was. Again, I don't think that it's going to, I still am not in the camp of saying I think it's going to happen, but I'm less entrenched in the idea that it won't happen.
Well, I don't think it's going to happen before the election is basically what was my argument, right? And I'm not totally convinced, but I have a whole lot of faith in him not having a second term. I really have a hard time believing that it's going to happen. The only thing I'm hesitant about is because I had the same feeling about him being elected to begin with. But yeah, and you know, so we saw how that turned out. So you know, so much for my feelings. But I don't see any action happening against him that's going to lead to him vacating his presidency before the election. I guess that was the point I was trying to make. Right?
He'll never let it go voluntarily. That's for sure.
Well, yeah. Well, there's no doubt of that. And you know, there's also this running theory that, I'll be honest, I'm beginning to subscribe to more and more, that even if he loses the election, he's going to try to come up with some way to hold on to the presidency. That's, you know, that's just pure speculation on our part, though. We really can't. There's nothing for us really to talk about other than, you know, pie in the sky. But I'll be honest, the longer this shit goes on, the more willing I am to subscribe to that theory. I shouldn't be, but I am. Going back to your same article, or the same subject, this is from CNN Politics. Another quote from his op-ed in the Wall Street Journal. A polemicist role is not sufficient for a leader. A leader must display strategic acumen that incorporates respect for all nations that have stood with us when trouble loomed. Returning to a strategic stance that includes interests of as many nations as we can make common cause with, we can better deal with the imperfect world we occupy together. Absent this, we occupy an increasingly lonely position, one that puts us at increasing risk with the world. He finished up by saying, all Americans need to realize that our democracy is an experiment. How many times have you heard, right, our government being, you know, the this great experiment, and one that cannot be reversed. We all know that we're better than our current politics. Tribalism must not be allowed to destroy our experiment. Now, we can get into another, Frank, we can have an entire pod with just the whole tribalism thing and how, you know, I'll make the argument that it's a result of the Fox News's of the world. So there's just an equal and opposite backlash. I mean, that's just hell. That's physics. But going back to what Mattis is saying, and you're right. He's definitely talking about Trump, even though he's not calling him out by name. You see him making us and forcing our country to pull away from these people who are our allies, whether it's Germany or France. Which are the two biggest, right? And you even saw Boris, what's his name, the idiot in England, take a swipe at him at the G7, right? You know, this guy has a damn, it's almost a gift of taking those who are on your side and alienating them, and taking those who are opposite you and reaching out to them and allowing yourself to be played. Because let's face it, North Korea is playing him like a champ. There's a part of me that wants to say that he just doesn't know what he's doing. And I almost want to say that's almost a self-preservation stance, because the only alternative is he knows exactly what he's doing. And that is a very, very scary thing to face up to.
It is. And, you know, I don't know. At times I believe that he's a buffoon, but at other times I think, and maybe the thing is this, Master Patsy, there are things that he clearly knows what he's doing, and he's playing that playbook that he likes to play very carefully in the way that he knows how to. But then when he strays into other areas that are outside of his expertise or outside of his, you know, level of comfort, so to speak, he still plays those things with the same type of braggadocio and the same type of swagger that he tries to carry himself with, but doesn't have the knowledge to back it up. And that's where he looks like a buffoon. And that's where we see the buffoonery. And it's very clear to us that he, quote unquote, doesn't know what he's doing. But the areas that he does know what he's doing, so for example, let's say the stock market and let's say trade. You know, here's a guy who has worked in international real estate for a long time. He's worked in watching the market for a long time. So when he does something like start a trade war and then try to manipulate the stock market with tweets, which he has done, I mean, one single tweet that he sent out sent the Dow plummeting 500 points just from a tweet in less than an hour that happened. You have to wonder, when somebody's been involved in the financial market and in the real estate market for as long as he has, and that's his world, you have to wonder, is he doing that to benefit people close to him? In other words, I'm sure you get this, but I'm gonna draw the map for everybody else listening. He could easily call his closest friends and confidants and wealthy people and say, just let everybody know, you might want to get out of certain positions in the next hour. I'm going to send out a tweet, and it's going to have an impact. And then, you know, send out another message to his friends. I'm going to make a comment about us dealing with China, and everything's going to be straightened away, and that'll have an impact as well. So you may want to jump back in before that next wave of increase in the market happens. So he can manipulate the market, you know, by his own actions and his words and his tweets.
Well, let's turn it around. And what if he receives a phone call from somebody that says, "Hey, I would really like to do this. Can you send out? Can you make it happen?"
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, either direction is possible.
Yep.
And again, it goes back to that same question: is he really that smart? Or, I guess, that diabolical might be a better way. You don't have to be smart to be diabolical. You just need to be able to recognize an opportunity. Or is he just simply way out of his league? Obviously, at the G7, he was way out of his league, right? I mean, that was very obvious. That these folks are folks who actually want to lead their countries. Now we can have, again, make other arguments. Are they doing it right? Do we agree with them? Or yet, you know, so on and so forth. But Angela Merkel wants the lead, period, right? She does not have her best interest at heart. She has her country's. Right. What's his name in France is the same way. Macron, right. Same thing, right? By the way, that shot across the bow whenever he invited what's his name from the Middle East over there, that was, I'll be honest, I was kind of impressed by that. That was a ballsy move. But you know, Trump's done nothing to show me that he puts his country first. And he's the only politician I've ever seen, well, the only president, I should say, I've ever seen that does that, right? Even if you look at either of the Bushes or Reagan, or, you know, just go on down the line. You know, I've always made the argument that our biggest problems with those guys wasn't anything other than, you know, we all want to score the touchdown. It's how are we going to score it? You know, are we a running team? Are we a passing team? Are we relying on defense? Are we, are we a West Coast offense type thing? You know, just on and on and on, back and forth. That's where our disagreements were. It wasn't, you know, what game we were playing. It wasn't should we even be on the field. It was, okay, what are we going to do when we're here? How are we going to win the game? This guy, I mean, we want to play football, and this guy wants to, you know, play cricket. You know, yeah. I mean, it's a totally different thing.
Yeah, and I mean, his loyalty, you have to start to wonder, where does his loyalty lie? And it seems ever increasingly to lie with Moscow, with Putin, and with other dictators around the world, like, you know, the Saudi government that is, you know, murdered an American journalist, Jamal Khashoggi, and with North Korea, you know, and the love affair that he has with Kim Jong-il, you know, that's where his loyalties lie. They don't lie with the American people. They don't lie with our American system of democracy, with our allies that have helped to protect us, that we've helped protect them over the years. And there's been a symbiotic, mutual, beneficial relationship between those allies and us, as Mattis has basically pointed out. So what you're saying is, you know, I agree with you. I think that those former presidents that maybe I've disagreed with on a lot of policy, I never questioned their loyalty to our country.
Right.
I think maybe they had a little more loyalty to the wealthy and to the businesses, as opposed to the people, the everyday people. And sometimes that clouded their judgment, you know, or made them make judgments that I was opposed to. But I think ultimately their loyalty to our country was clear.
Yeah,
that's the difference in my mind.
Yeah, mine too. Like I said, you know, those guys, yeah, they were always about, you know, company first, big business first, you know, so on and so forth. But whenever we were talking about things that happen outside the country, or, you know, outside of our family, right?
Yes.
And you know how it is, right? We can fight inside the family all we want, but whenever it comes to outside the family, we all are in lockstep, and it, you know, we'll fight among ourselves, but if there's somebody else trying to get in here, now we're going to jack your shit up. Right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
You don't see that with him. I mean, look at what he does with just Congress, female minority Congress people, how he handles them. Right? He's not America first. He's Donald J. Trump first, period. That's all there is to it.
I mean, clearly he took the side of a foreign government or was trying to influence a foreign government to take the side against our own elected officials recently. We talked about that a week or so ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Clearly this guy is not America first. You know, it's more than disheartening that that's the case and that there's not some movement there is a movement. Let's face it. There's 150 some representatives that mm-hmm. have signed on, but I guess that there wasn't an earlier movement and more of a movement in the direction of removing this guy from office.
Do you think that this Joe Walsh thing is going to is going to do anything? Do you think it's going to have any impact? Because he did formally say that he's running, right? I mean, there's no question. He's definitely running.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, it's going to have an impact. It's not going to have the impact of, you know, he's not going to win a primary against Trump.
I think
where it could, you know, look, let's take that thing to a little couple logical leaps, though. Let's say I'm going to take a couple of sides. First off, I think Joe Walsh, you know, he has a good format because he's got a radio voice that's been out there for, you know, 4 or 5 years, that he's accumulated a crowd of people that follow him and they listen to him. And when he was, you know, when he was singing Trump's praises, he built up a big following amongst the Trump people. So now they're going to have a cognitive dissonance. Those people are going to have to say, wait a minute. And the only way they could justify his turn is to say, well, he's out for himself now. He wants to run for office. But then they have to say, you know, but if that's the case, then he has to win in order to really achieve anything, because if his listeners are turned off by his stance, then who does he have if he wants to go back to radio again? So there's a logical, you know, cognitive dissonance there, I think, that people have to examine and say, maybe this isn't just all about, you know, personal gain on his part. Maybe he's really calling out the president. And then the other issue that I think it has an impact on is, I think that he's got a voice amongst conservative Republicans who are not Trumpites, who are going to say, well, look, there's enough evidence out there that people can change, and that people with voices who are influencers can change. So when that kind of thing happens, it's like there's been a fear associated with opposing Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it was always like, well, from a Republican standpoint, if we do that, so to speak, then I'm in jeopardy of losing my next election because Trump will turn all his minions against me.
Right.
But now you've got Republican people who are making stands. And, you know, he wasn't holding an office at this time, Joe Walsh, but he's got a public that listens to him, that, quote unquote, he answers to from a radio standpoint. And if he loses all his listeners, then he loses his job. So, you know, I think there's some similar types of risk that's involved in that. And I think some Republican leadership has to look at that and say, yeah, you know what, there's less fear in opposing Trump these days. And why is that? Because the man is losing support from key players left and right.
Yeah.
So I think it's not a winning political position. In other words, he's not going to win any primaries, but it's something that could have an impact. And let me take one last step and one last leap on this. We've got states that have voted or have talked about voting to keep a candidate off the ballot if they don't disclose their tax returns.
Mm-hmm.
I think New York and California, right?
Right.
Well, gee, wouldn't that mean that if somebody like Joe Walsh, who has a known name amongst Republican voters, is right on the ballot in New York and California, and Trump is not, puts a big dent in his ability to win the Republican primary, doesn't it?
Well, here's another question I have for you, and you're damn right, but here's another question I have for you. Do you think, and I'm just literally asking your opinion, Joe Walsh would be served best to run as an independent. Because I promise you, he or somebody, whoever he entrusts with his campaign, has thought about it. So I'm asking you, what do you think he would be better off? Because let's face it, his total goal, and he has said so much, he doesn't want to win. He just wants Trump to lose.
Right.
Do you think he's going to gain enough votes, or he's going to pull enough people away from Trump if he ran as an independent?
No.
He's going to get some Democrats. Let's face it, he will. But do you think he's going to get enough from the other side? Republicans?
No. If his stated goal is to make sure Trump loses, I don't think he'll run as an independent, because almost all analysts indicate that a third party benefits Trump. Even a strong third party benefits Trump. So
even a Tea Partier.
I don't know that they run the numbers on that. It would be interesting to see, but yeah, I'd be a little bit leery. I personally, I'd be leery of him doing that. And so, and then, you know, I think that he'd have to really examine if that's his stated goal and that's his true goal. I think he'd have to take a look at whether or not his numbers are taking directly from Trump voters. At least I'd have to say like at least a 3-1. You know, like every one Democrat he peels off three Trump voters. You know, if that's the case, then I'd say, okay, go ahead and jump in and do it. If it's 2-1, then you're talking about polling and polling errors and things like that. And it's like, I don't know if the juice is worth the squeeze there. So I'd have to say at least 3-1 would have to be the numbers.
Yeah, I have a tendency to agree with you. I think if he decides he's going to run, he's going to stay as a Republican, and he's going to continue to run, he's going to try to primary Trump, then I have a lot more faith in what he's saying to me. I'm willing to believe him a little bit more, right? But yeah. If he decides he's going to run as an independent, then I'm going to start questioning a lot of the things that he's saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that. Well, Frank, this has been great. As always, you're absolutely phenomenal. I think this is a good place to finish it. Is there anything you want to say before we put this thing to bed?
You know, I want to remind people that there's a We the People march coming up on September 21st. We talked about it on the last pod. I just want to tell people I don't know. Directly anything about registering for it, and whether I would probably not register for it myself personally, but I may participate in that march because I think it's important for our voices to be heard. You know, I've been paying attention to what's going on in Puerto Rico and in Hong Kong and the Ukraine. And when mass people turn out to voice their displeasure with the way things are happening, it seems to create change. So I think it's important for people to participate in things like that. So what I'm saying is keep an eye on that date, keep an eye on the opportunities to be involved. I'm not advocating that you put your name on a piece of paper or registered anything, because there is a little fear involved in, sure, in associating your name with something, and who knows who gets that list, so to speak. But you know, I don't think you have to put your name on a list to participate, is what I'm saying. So no. I think that's an important date to keep in mind. I also think that the organizers have stated that they want people's input and their opinions on, you know, what is the purpose of the march. And they don't want to limit it to, well, we have this list of demands. But I do think that it's important to have a set of goals. And, you know, maybe some of those goals could be something like, you know, have a serious impeachment inquiry, have right. a serious yes. debate over the things that we've seen happen in the Emoluments Clause, violations of the Emoluments Clause. A return to normalcy in our government, in the sense of not allowing the presidency to be used as a platform for personal gain, you know, something to those effects. But in any event, I'm just making mention that I think there's an opportunity very near to us, very near in time, to do something as a people to change the course of our country. So pay attention to that. And then on a lesser important note, but still important because we have this format to talk about, is I want to remind people to follow you, Patsy Zerillo, on Twitter, to follow your Lessons from the Dojang on Twitter, to follow you on YouTube with your Mastering the News on Sundays, and to subscribe to Butchered Sports on YouTube and to follow my Butchered Sports channel on Twitter as well.
You know, you're killing me. I was just going to plug you. I was just going to do it. yeah, don't forget, everybody, going into the same order that, that Frank did it, the We the People March. You know, just Google We the People March. It'll take you right to the link. They'll give you all the information you need. To be honest, it's something that I'm trying really hard to make time in order to do. I would love to do it. I would love to be a part of it. And I'm going to do everything in my power to my wife as well. She's going to try really, really hard to. And to be honest, Nick, you know, my 19-year-old son is all for it. You know, I love the enthusiasm of youth. I really do. So just go to the just Google the We the People March. It'll get you to the website. You'll have all the information you need. And on the second part of that, that Frank said, Butchered Sports on YouTube. Frank has a channel on YouTube, and we put the audio from his YouTube channel. We put it up as a pod, the Butchered Sports pod. We put that up right after it's recorded. Well, what you see on YouTube is live. It's not edited. It's not anything. It's Frank's channel. He does a fantastic job on it. You guys would not believe how great a channel it is. And then we take that audio and we throw it out as a pod. So if you can't get to YouTube or you don't want to watch it, you just want to listen to it while you're driving, listen to the pod because it's absolutely brilliant. Frank's absolutely amazing on it. So that's Butchered Sports. If you can follow it, it's awesome. So until next week, Frank, I like to say, you know, whenever you and I finish up a pod and when Master Grant and I finish up a pod on Sundays, to everybody, your time is very valuable. And the fact that you're willing to spend some of that time with us means a great deal to us. Honest to God, folks, you have no idea how important that is to us. It means a whole lot to us. And until next week, same bad time, same bad channel. If you don't understand what that means, you're far too young to be listening to this podcast. So until then, all I can say is to everybody, goodbye, good luck, and God bless. And we'll talk to you again next week. Goodbye.
Butchered Sports, raw and unfiltered, the way you wish your local sports anchor would bring it to you. Find us on Twitter at Butchered Sports and on YouTube at Butchered Sports. Make sure to like, comment, and subscribe.
Thanks for listening to Holy Shit with Frank and Master Patsy. If you like our show, please subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. And don't forget to support us on Patreon. Join us again next week when we discuss the next thing that made us say, Holy Shit.